This is Digital Story Podcast number 629, April 3rd, 2018. Today's theme is Laika in Paradise. I'm Derek Story. Exploring an island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean is definitely a place where I want to travel light. It's warm, it's humid, and flip-flops and board shorts are the apparel of the day. Feels like a good challenge for a Micro Four Thirds Leica Deluxe. And in this show, I'm going to tell you how it fared. So yes, I'm recording this from Maui right now, and I'm definitely not in the recording studio, but I do have my trusty audio recorder, and I have the Leica camera in question, and it has been pouring outside for quite a few hours now, so much so that you can't even go out in it. It's like nutty. I wanted to go out and work on one of my photo projects this afternoon, get out there for, I don't know, I think I survived 45 minutes in this hurricane-like weather, and did not get any shots at all. And finally just came back and ate flatbread and had a lava flow. And sometimes that's just what you have to do when you're out on the islands. Those of you that have listened to the podcast for a while know that I try to get out here about every year, 2 years. It depends on the year. Some years I get to come every year. Sometimes it's every other year. But I have been coming out here for quite a while. It's a good place to see the world differently and have a different day, have a different workflow, have different challenges, challenges in terms of my photography and my writing and recording podcasts and things. So it just sort of shakes things up very nicely. And I usually try to test something when I come out here. And this time around, I'm testing the Leica Deluxe Type 109. And, you know, this is an interesting camera in the sense that it was released in the beginning of 2015. Which, in the world of digital cameras, that seems like a long time ago for a camera that is still in current production. And not only that, and this part really fascinates me, since its release, there have been no price drops. So, I mean, the camera runs a little over $1,000 if you buy the Leica version of it. I'll talk more about the Panasonic version here in a minute. And in fact, Leica just announced, and this is how it really got on my radar, because I was just sort of astonished by this. Leica just announced the Digital Camera Explorer Kit for $1,195. That includes a 49-inch long red Leica rope strap and the auto lens cap. And the auto lens cap is really neat. I wish I had it for the model that I'm testing, but it's very much like the auto lens cap that Olympus has that I use on the 14-42mm EZ. And it's just so handy. You turn on the camera, the lens extends, and it's ready to shoot. You don't have to mess with a lens cap at all. My point being that this camera, I was thinking, must be pretty decent if it came out in 2015. It's still in production. People are still buying it. And in fact, Leica is still packaging it and repackaging it in these different kits and selling it for a price that has not been discounted at all. Now, that does lead me to the Panasonic version of this camera, which is the Lumix LX100. And it has basically the same configuration as the Leica. I'm sure the firmware is different, but in terms of the zoom lens and all the other goodies, and the zoom lens is a very, very nice lens. It's one of the things I really like about this camera. It's the Vario Summilux f1.7-2.8 zoom lens, which is really terrific. And the other thing I like about it is that it is a wide 24 millimeters at f1.7, and then it zooms out to 75 millimeters. And even when it's at the 75 millimeter setting, you only lose basically a stop of light. It's at f2.8. So to get, you know, that fast of a zoom lens with a Micro Four Thirds sensor in a package that's relatively small, I mean, that is pretty nice. But anyway, so the Lumix LX100 with the same lens and basically the same components, sans firmware and the, you know, the Leica markings, it has the Panasonic markings, that's currently on sale for $597. So basically half the price, or roughly half the price of the Leica version of the camera. So if you listen to this show and you go, you know what, this is a camera that I'm interested in, you really have two ways to go about this. The first way would be that you can own a Leica, essentially for $1,000. And it is very much a Leica camera. It feels like a Leica, the lens is Leica, it takes excellent pictures. So that's one way to look at it. The other way to look at it is that you can own a compact Micro Four Thirds sensor camera with a Leica lens for $600. And it just has the Panasonic branding on it. Either way, it's a camera that came out in 2015 and is still going strong. And that alone is very impressive. I'll get into the aesthetics of the camera in a second. Let me just give you a better feel for the specifications of it so you know what we're talking about. So this is not an interchangeable lens camera. It comes with that 24 to 75 f1.7 to 2.8 lens, that Leica zoom, and that is the lens that you have. And obviously there are pros and cons to that. I'll have to say, for the most part though, pros. It is a terrific lens. I love the lens on this camera. It has a 12.8 megapixel, a 4/3 CMOS sensor. The zoom, as I mentioned before, is a 3x zoom, so 24 to 75, and that's in 35 millimeter equivalents. It has a 3-inch 920,000 dot LCD monitor, and then it also has an electronic viewfinder, you know, that's of pretty high resolution. It's pretty nice, although I have to say I don't like the electronic viewfinder, the built-in electronic viewfinder, as much as the electronic viewfinder I have on my Olympus cameras. I think the Olympus electronic viewfinders, as I look through the EM10 Mark II, as I look through the Pen F, as I look through the EM5 and the EM1, I like those electronic viewfinders a bit better than this one. However, this one is still quite good. Has built-in Wi-Fi connectivity with NFC. And there is a companion app for both Android and iOS devices. ISO 25,600. So I haven't pushed it that high, but I have shot up around 3,200. And because it does have that larger sensor, that Micro Four Thirds sensor, it hangs in there pretty well at the higher ISO settings. Optical image stabilization. So the stabilization's in the lens, not sensor based. There is not a built-in flash, but it does come with a flash. I wasn't able to test the flash because it wasn't included in the unit that I got from Leica for testing. And that's kind of an interesting side note in itself, because when I received the camera from Leica, clearly this camera had been used a lot by previous reviewers. I won't say that it was beat up, but it had seen what I call some city miles. It was really, and it was pretty dirty, and you know, there was, you know, a few scratches on the back LCD and so on and so forth. So at first I was taken aback by this, but then I was thinking, okay, this camera really has been, you know, rode hard and put away wet. So let's see what kind of pictures it takes after a couple years of abuse. I mean, in a sense, it was like a car rental, right? It was like getting a car from, you know, Budget that had been in service for 2 years and say, okay, you know, how does this thing hold up to that kind of treatment? Well, as it turned out, in terms of performance, in terms of, you know, the lens, in terms of the images, in terms of taking pictures and all that kind of stuff, it has held up very well. So I think one of the things that I can say about my test model that I wouldn't be able to say if I had received a brand new one is that this camera can take not abuse so much, but certainly it is a travel camera that is meant for travel, and you don't have to baby it. I don't think you have to baby it because it seems built really tough and really well, and can take, you know, the wear and tear that comes with a camera that's on the road a lot. And so that is the good news with the model that I received. In that, yep, it has been road tested. Now, let's talk about the aesthetics of the camera and using it and so forth. By the way, I'll start with the menu system because a lot of times that's what drives us crazy when we start working with a camera that we're not familiar with. And I thought the menu system was quite good with this. I didn't have any confusion at all. I was able to navigate around. The menus were, you know, easy to read, and I could find what I wanted. So I thought the menu system was quite good. You know, one of the things, though, about using the LCD is that it is fixed to the back of the camera. And it's been a while since I've used a fixed back LCD. All the cameras that I use for my personal use all have LCDs that either swing out, they're either fully articulated or they swing up and down. And that includes all my Olympus cameras and the Pentax KP that I shoot with, DSLR. So it's been a while since I used a fixed back LCD, and I did notice a difference. I really did. I thought, wow, you know, when I'm doing something at a real low angle or I'm doing something at a very high angle above my head, looking at the LCD and composing the shot was a much different and much more difficult than when I have an LCD that I can tilt one way or another. So I would say that if you're used to shooting with a tilting LCD or a fully articulated LCD, chances are pretty good that you will notice a difference with this fixed back LCD. It is part of the camera and it is staying there. So for me personally, I have to put that in the con category because I really found after a week and a half of shooting with this camera that I missed the tilting LCD. And as I mentioned earlier, the electronic viewfinder is very handy. I love having it, but I do like the electronic viewfinder a little bit better with my Olympus cameras. So I'd give it a middle of the road rating on the electronic viewfinder. Now you get into the zoom lens and the imaging pipeline with this camera, and things get really good really fast. I love the images that this camera produces, both JPEGs and RAW. So I was shooting RAW plus JPEGs and comparing, and the JPEGs are very nice. They're very punchy, very crisp, produces terrific JPEGs. And the RAW files are quite good also. And the image quality from this camera, I would say, is exceptional. It really is. I mean, for carrying a camera that has this fast of a zoom lens, in this compact of a package, this easy to carry around, producing those types of images. And I was looking at those images both in photos for Mac OS and in Capture One Pro 11, version 11, and the RAWs and the JPEGs in both applications just looked fantastic. It's easy to get spoiled with the images that this camera produces, and I would doubt that you would have too many people not absolutely love the image quality that the Leica Deluxe produces. It is terrific. And, you know, I would put that at the very top of the pros list, which is if you want great image quality in a relatively compact package with a relatively fast lens, f1.7 for a zoom lens that's fitting on a camera this size, that is a nice combination. And I liked those factors so much that I was willing to overlook, you know, a couple of the things that I didn't like as well. For instance, the fixed back LCD is one of them. I think the buttons on the camera, I found myself accidentally changing the settings on the cameras a few times because of the placement of the buttons. Now, that would probably improve as I became, you know, more familiar with the camera, and that would probably get better over time. It wasn't as customizable as I'm used to with, for instance, an Olympus camera that's very customizable. You can basically change the function of any of the buttons on an Olympus camera. This one was a little bit more, it is what it is. And, you know, you just have to learn how to work with the way that the camera is designed. Now, when I've talked to people and exchanged mail with people who have used this camera, either the Panasonic version or the Leica version, you know, one of the things that they said was that it's a little bit bigger than I wanted to carry around for a bang around travel camera. And I think implied in that, or part of that comment, is also it's a bit heavier too. So I was really thinking about that as I was lugging it around, and I just put lugging it with, you know, smiley faces on both sides of that phrase there, because that wasn't a problem for me. And the way that I was looking at it, and I have my Olympus with me, the OMD EM10 Mark II with a 14-42 zoom lens on it, and you know, I put them, you know, right next to each other, and they're the same length, you know, so if you put them bottom to bottom, they're pretty much exactly the same length, and the Leica lens probably protrudes out a little bit more, but not a whole lot. The Leica is definitely heavier, not necessarily better made than the EM10 Mark II, which is super well made itself. The thing is, I guess the bottom line is that with the Olympus camera, for something that's about the same size, you get interchangeable lenses, and with the Leica and the Panasonic, that lens is on there. However, the thing that I would come back at is that you're going to have a hard time getting an f1.7 to 2.8 zoom lens that covers that range that compact for an Olympus camera. So, and definitely not for a Sony camera, right? That on the Sony camera, that lens is going to be a lot bigger. So I thought that in the end, that the size was not a problem for me, nor was the weight. And I have a little pouch that I carry it in, and so it either fits on my belt, or I throw it in my shoulder bag when I'm out and about, or I can put it in a small, like a low pro pouch with a strap, and just throw it over my shoulder. I've carried it around a lot of different ways, and it really wasn't an issue. And the nice thing about it was that because it is good in low light, because it has that fast lens and that big sensor and all that kind of stuff, I didn't really have to carry any accessories with it. So it was just the camera with me. And, you know, when you're just carrying a camera that size, it's really not too bad. So for me, the size was not an issue. I think that for what you get out of the camera, and especially the image quality, I can live with the size. I definitely can live. And even when I say it that way, I still feel like I'm selling it short, because the size is not that big. It's, you know, look at the specs. I have, you know, a link to the camera in the show notes. And I also have a link to the Panasonic LX100 in the show notes. Same specs, right? So you can look at either one. But it's not that big. As I said, it's the same length as the EM10 Mark II. So there you have it. And then finally, we get to the price tag itself. And I would say that this is very interesting to me, that the price hasn't dropped on the Leica end at all. I know Leica approaches their brand in a very specific way. To be able to get the Panasonic version of the camera for less than $600. I would say that even though it came out in early 2015, that is still a pretty good deal. You're getting really a heck of a good camera right here in a pretty compact package. The thing that I would wonder about with a Photokina coming up later this year, is this a camera that's going to get refreshed, or is it a camera that is just going to be what it is and continues to be what it is for the foreseeable future? And I have no idea which way this is going to go on that. So that would be the part, if I was using my own money, that I would wrestle with spending $600 or $1,100 for a camera that's a couple years old already with Photokina around the corner. And then the other thing that is a bit of a wrestling match for me is the resolution, which is 12.8 megapixels. I'm very much used to 16 to 20 megapixels for my Micro Four Thirds camera. It's been a long time since I've shot a camera at 12.8. Now, I understand, of course, that at 12.8, that allows them to have the better low light performance, especially for a camera that, you know, was developed a few years ago. So I totally get that. However, the image quality is so good that there's a part of me that wants that resolution to be up closer to 16 megapixels instead of 12 or 13. I would love this camera at 20 megapixels. At 20 megapixels. And that would be the thing to see if Panasonic and Leica can do this coming up later this year. Can they refresh this camera so that it has the great lens, has a Micro Four Thirds sensor, it has a lot of the great attributes that it has, the low light performance at a higher megapixel count would be really, really nice. I would love that. So, you know, we'll wait and see. So it puts, though, us as buyers in a difficult position without the crystal ball, without the announcement, knowing, okay, I'd really like to have a camera like this, but is this something that I want to spend the money on now, or do I want to wait until later this year to see what happens? That's a tough question. I wish I could give you a great answer on that. I can't. And in fact, you know, once I get back from this road trip, I'll be having to send the camera back myself, and then I will be in the same position as everyone else here. So anyway, that is my look at the Leica, the D-Lux Type 109, and its twin brother, the Panasonic Lumix LX100. I'm going to upload some pictures to Flickr from this camera, and so I'll put the link to that in the show notes so you can take a look at those. The image quality is not going to be an issue for you, I can tell you that right now. I would say it really comes down to price, age, and megapixels. Those are the biggies, and depending on how you feel about that, will probably drive how you feel about the camera overall. I want to mention the new iPad that Apple announced at its education event recently. You know, it's interesting. When I was talking about how I was packing for the road back before I left on this trip, I did have people write me and say, well, you know, why are you taking a laptop? Why don't you take an iPad and use Affinity Photo instead of, you know, lugging around a laptop all over the place? You know, there's a couple reasons why even I, the nimble photographer, carry a laptop instead of an iPad when I have to do work, when I have to do work. And part of it is because I do want to use the full version of Photos. I do want to use Luminar. I do want to use Capture One Pro. You know, I want to use those apps. I like those apps, and I'm very comfortable working with my images on those apps. So that's part of the reason. Another part of the reason is that I like having all the ports so that I can plug stuff in easily. That's important to me as well. And then I like a really nice keyboard, and so that's another part of it for me. So then I was looking at the new iPad that was announced at the education event. You know, Macworld did a test with the new iPad, and it's called the new iPad. And it starts at $329 with the Apple Pencil, which is an accessory, a $99 accessory. And, you know, they said basically it held up very well when compared to the iPad Pro in terms of Apple Pencil performance. So I was thinking, well, that is kind of neat, having a device that I could put a Bluetooth keyboard on, have an Apple Pencil, and, you know, have the weight less than the 13-inch MacBook Pro that I'm carrying around. I don't have the apps that I want to use, but I do have a very compact package. I did a little math on this, and yes, the new iPad is definitely cheaper than, let's say, a MacBook Pro. Even though it starts at $329, though, if you get the 128-gigabyte model with cellular plus Wi-Fi, then it's $559. Then you have to add another $100 for the Apple Pencil, and then you're going to have some sort of keyboard set up. So now you're at $660, $760, tax and so forth. You're going to be about $800. Okay, so that's still less than a Surface Pro. That's still less than a MacBook Pro. However, you know, that's also real money. And so, you know, my feeling is that once I get up to a certain amount there, I want what I want. And if it's a few hundred dollars more, then, you know, I can live with that. Now, I do carry, by the way, an iPad mini with me. You probably saw it in the bag. And the reason why I do that is because it is good when I'm out and about during the day. I do like the size of the screen, having a bigger size screen than my iPhone. And I have a different cellular carrier on the iPad than I do my iPhone. I actually have Verizon on the iPad, which means if I'm in a hotel situation where the hotel Wi-Fi goes south on me, which it does so often, AT&T isn't working, which happens sometimes where connectivity isn't good, then I have one more carrier. Is sort of like, okay, here's my last hope. And please, Verizon, come through for me. And then I can use the iPad mini as my connectivity for my MacBook Pro or for anything else. So it's really great for that. I would love to see, by the way, and I know I'm in the minority on this, but I would love to see the iPad mini revised, where it takes the Apple Pencil, where it has the new processor, where it has the new screen, where it has all the goodies. I would love to see that refresh. That would tempt me because that fits in so many of my camera bags and is the size that I really like. But at the moment, Apple doesn't seem that interested in that particular iPad model. We'll see what happens up the road. I want to talk a little bit about the Apple Photos Book for Photographers, the second edition. And there's a couple of reasons why I want to talk about it. First, it's out now. I have mentioned that before. It's available on Amazon and Rocky Nook. And it's a book that I've had a chance to go through now since it's been printed a few times, which is always different than when you're writing it. Once it's printed, then you really get to evaluate how good or, you know, what you like and don't like about the book. And I have to say it's a book that I really like, and it's not just because I wrote it. And I think for a lot of folks who are in the Apple ecosystem and might be interested in giving photos a second look, this would be an excellent book to do that. So I have something to sort of sweeten the pot a little bit. And that is, if you go on to Amazon or Rocky Nook, and I have a link to the book in the show notes, and buy a copy of the book, send me an email. And I think the best way to do that is via the contact form that's on the Nimble Photographer site. So you just go to thenimblephotographer.com and click on contact and use that form. It's really easy, and it shows up in an email account that I look at a lot. And let me know that you bought the book. And then I have a movie for you, and it's called How to Organize Like a Pro in Photos. And I talk about the system that I put together so that you could have star ratings very easily, star ratings for your images and photos. And it's using the new filter command, you know, filtering not in terms of like lens filtering, but in terms of filtering pictures, using the new filter command and using keyboard shortcuts for keywords. That combination is really easy to set up and is very powerful. And then suddenly start using it with albums and smart albums and folders, and you can organize very quickly the traditional way in Photos, and you still have all the great AI that's going on underneath the hood and all the other wonderful things that's happening with this application in terms of location data, in terms of face recognition, you know, all that stuff is going on too. So you can have all the new modern goodies along with the traditional way to organize your photos. So I have this movie for people who buy the book, and this is an offer that's between now and April 15th. If you buy the book, let me know, and this is going to be the honor system, right? I'm not going to ask you to send me a receipt or anything. I'll believe you if you say that you bought the book. And then I will send you a link to the movie, How to Organize Like a Pro in Photos. And the only thing that I ask is that you don't share the movie with other people, right? Unless they bought the book. If they bought the book, then that's okay. You can share the movie with them. But if they haven't bought the book, I prefer that you don't share the movie. You know, and we'll just work off the honor system on that. So that is between now and April 15th. I think that this book, the Apple Photos Book for Photographers, second edition, is a terrific book. I'd love for you to give it a try. I'd love for you to give photos a second chance. And hopefully offering you this really cool movie will help motivate you to do that. Alrighty, well, the rain is still coming down really intense out there. This is wild. I'm going to be very curious to see what, if anything, I'm going to be able to do tomorrow. I'm going to be up late tonight. You know, one of the crazy things about working out here on the islands is that I'm 3 hours behind California time. And I always felt like I was behind the eight ball in California because California is 3 hours behind East Coast time. So now I'm 6 hours behind East Coast time, which means if I'm publishing something, let's say at 3 a.m. here in Hawaii, then yeah, it feels like the middle of the night to me, but it's 6 a.m. in California and it's already 9 a.m. in New York, and I'm, you know, up in the middle of the night here. It's just wacky. So if it rains all day tomorrow, then that just means that I'll do some exercise, and then I'll probably catch up on my sleep a bit. Because, you know, it's going to be like, I don't even know what time I'll go to bed tonight because of this podcast. So, funny side note. And then, of course, I'll have to reacclimate when I finally go back. But I want to mention our Patreon members just for a minute, our Inner Circle members, and let you guys and gals know 2 new videos for you, and you should have been notified via Patreon, and I also tweeted about it and put it on Facebook. So 2 videos. That's something that I'm trying to do every month to thank you for supporting the site, for supporting this podcast. I so appreciate it. And if I get back out to shoot again, which I'm hoping I will here, I'm working on a project here, I'm going to do a behind the scenes video for you for next month. So cross your fingers that I can get out there and do this video. And if I can, that will be one of the movies that I'll share with you in May. So we have a tile on all the pages of The Digital Story. If you want to support this podcast and support, you know, what we're doing here, click on the Patreon tile, sign up and become a member of our Inner Circle. I'll do my best to treat you well, and at the same time, you knowing that you're doing good by the entire community that this podcast serves. And finally, a big thanks to the folks at Red River Paper. They are the ones that stand behind us month in and month out. They make my favorite printing paper on the planet. And I'll give you a hint. What I want to do involves printing fine art cards. And I'm really excited to take the content that I'm gathering here for one of these specific projects, getting back to my printer at home and creating this set of fine art cards. And there'll be more about that, of course. I don't want to talk about it too much right now because I haven't finished the shooting yet. And if I can't get to the locations that I want, then I'm going to have to rethink the project. Either way, from the beginning, I've been thinking about fine art cards and what fun it would be to work on that project as one of the projects that I do while I'm over here right now. And that's what printing does for me. It gets me excited about doing these sorts of things, about putting together something that I can put in people's hands. And, you know, Red River Paper is the one that really got me going on this. And, you know, the material that they have for me to work with in terms of all the different cardstocks, all the different envelopes and sleeves and all that, not to mention all the great printing papers and all the various sizes and the inspiration they provide on their site, really keeps me motivated to work on stuff like this. And they help us keep the show on the air. So they have a tile on all the pages of the Digital Story. Go over there, click on it, take a look at what they have to offer, and think about maybe a good project for you. It's a very satisfying thing to do with your photography, to go all the way from the very beginning, which is concept, to capture, to printing, to handing it off to somebody. Oh, wow, it feels good. So Red River Paper, and they also have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. Alrighty, well, that is going to do it for me from the island for this week. Hope you enjoy the review of that Leica/Panasonic camera. I have to tell you, I have really enjoyed the images that have come out of that camera. And I'm probably going to shoot now with the OMD EM10 Mark II for a few days just to really get a feel for how different the experience is and, you know, how the images stack up to the Leica. But I tell you, if you want a camera where you don't have to worry about dust getting on the sensor or changing lenses, and you just want one thing to put in your backpack as you head out the door for a week or 2 weeks or whatever, the image quality is really quite good. And I would love it if Leica and Panasonic give us an updated version to this camera later on this year. I think that would be fantastic. And I would probably buy it with my own money. Alrighty, until next week, I'm still working on some good stuff. Hopefully I'll be able to report on it for the next podcast. Thanks for joining me this week. Have a great week, and I'll see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.